Hi everyone, thank you for joining. Today's peer insight from the Wikibon community for December 13th is Data on Disk is Dead Data, How Flash is Changing System Design Forever. David Floyer will be sharing with the community some of his research and the information that he has found through discussions with practitioners and the vendor community. You can find much more information on this topic by going to wikibon.org. So David, why don't you introduce the topic to us some, and thank you everyone for joining. Please keep your call on mute. Until later, we will have plenty of time for question and answer.
Response times that for 3 seconds for response time, if systems get much longer than that, they become very difficult to use and productivity goes down. And within that time, the number of database calls or access to data is limited. Limited to approximately about 100 database calls, approximately about 20 or so accesses to disk, read or write accesses to disk. And anything over that, you start to have to do some serious design to avoid the disk issues, or you have to have very long response times. And that's been in place for a very long time. You know, systems designers have always known that. And what the result of that is that you have got system sprawl. What do I mean by that? I mean that a system does one job, limited by the amount of data that it can actually access or update. And it focuses on one job. And then if another job is required further down the workflow, it's usually a separate system. And the connection between them is usually asynchronous. There's asynchronous update, or there's batch updates, or whatever the mechanisms are to keep the systems in line. Over time, that system sprawl becomes very difficult to manage, and systems get further apart. And one of the major issues about maintenance is keeping these systems up to date. Does it work? Yes, it works well. Could it be better? Absolutely. So that's the main history behind it. The disk systems just comparatively are so relatively slow. We're talking about milliseconds when the systems are now operating in nanoseconds, and the speed of the disk, rotation of the disk, just has not changed very much at all over the last 20, 30 years.
Great, David. Yeah, I've seen there's been such an explosion of new players in this environment, and we know Moore's Law keeps chugging along. On the network side, we're seeing that giant transition from 1 gig to 10 gig. Ethernet and 40 and 100 gig are soon off there, and disk has stayed relatively constant from the access speeds on your 15K drive. So, you know, from an infrastructure standpoint, it's definitely ripe for disruption. So you shared kind of the current constraint from a system design. From the application standpoint, are there some examples you can share that are really removing some of these architectural constraints?
Absolutely. If you look at most of the modern applications, the fundamental system design avoids getting data from disk, at least for the data when it's needed by the end user. Obviously, there's storage on disk, and there will be forever in terms of the raw data itself, and archive data, but production data is essentially on disk. But let me give you some examples. Search is one of those examples. It was a great paper written by Google pointing out that it was quicker to get a piece of data from a cache in London than it was to get it from disk in Mountain View, the Google headquarters. So the design of the search systems from Google or Yahoo or Microsoft essentially are about, they're simpler because they're read-only to a large extent, But the reading of that data is always to find the cache with that data in it that's required. And cache management systems abound so that the closest copy of that data can be found and used to generate the answers of the query. So that's one example. Another example is if you take modern transactions, things like Facebook. Facebook has very large databases within it, and what they found was that they just could not get the level of performance with traditional storage systems. What ran out of capacity then was the locking rate on the databases. That's the final frontier. And the only way that they could get the volume of data through those systems, I mean, they were already very, very parallelized, but the single points of control that were needed, the only way of getting those was to put those databases in memory, in stuff like Fusion I.O. Apple Siri is another great example. There again, it's a similar technology that's got to be answered in 3 seconds or so to be useful, and the data itself is pre-staged, obviously into memory, and the memory again is held in storage, either in real storage or in flash memory, distributed through the system. And last example is the IBM Watson system. That system was shown in Jeopardy, answering questions in Jeopardy, and it's now being used for the health industry, and is a potentially fantastic advancement in terms of being able to ask either a doctor to ask or a patient to be able to ask what's wrong with them, what could be the causes, the idea of having blades, lots of blades with all of the data in memory so that the questions can be asked and the answers given within that magic 3-second time scale. So those are some of the examples, and obviously there are a lot more in development now.
It's Josh. I have some remarks. The remark number one, you spoke previously on the disk, like the disk are without cache. Mainframe, about 88% of all the requests for read are read from the cache. In Unix and Windows, less, about 70%, but also within the cache. Now, in access, typical access of social networks is access sequential data. Sequential data, traditional data, traditional system will be fast because they have sequential data prefetching. When you are prefetching to cache, and you don't go to the disk itself, you read the data from the cache. It will be faster. It will be faster than SSD. About the example with Google, a very simple don't believe for a very simple reason. It's against the laws of physics. You have a delay of 1 millisecond for every 100 kilometer. This is the speed of the light. And cannot be that they got faster. It's possible only something is wrong in Palo Alto. So. The thing is also about data transfer rate. The data transfer of the rate of the disk increased a lot. 15 years ago, it was 4.2 megabytes per second. Today, you have 8 standard and 16 brocade already announced 16 gigabytes per second as well. Now, the parallel development you have in IP and iSCSI. So the development is there. The only problem is that development is in steps. It's not analog development in interface. Any interface always increase in steps.
So, Josh, thanks for that contribution. The bottom line, though, is that the disk is still a constraint. And yes, you can put your disks in parallel, and you can prefetch, and you can do things like that. But that gives you a very, from a systems design point of view, gives you a very, very limited capability. And even if you can get to 80% or even 90% hit rate on your caches, you still then still have that 10% that you have to go to disk for. And that 10% you rapidly run out of capability of accessing data. From a technology point of view, if we take 2015 as a reference point, by 2015 there will be no applications where flash will not outperform disk very significantly. By 2015, that's only 3 years away.
Today is also will outperform. The only question is, what is the optimal if you consider the price? If you look at a typical user can justify economically 5 to 12% of the data to residue on SSDs. The rest will be waste because he will pay 10, 20 times more than normal disks.
So Josh, so you always we're going to be digging into some of the pricing and the architecture, so I appreciate the contribution, but I'd like to allow David to kind of go through a little bit more of his piece, and you know, definitely plenty of opportunity to dig into this. All right?
Is that all right, Josh? We'll come back to that then, okay?
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
All right. I mean, what you're saying is true at the moment, but we'll show what's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess, David, you know, you talked about kind of Google and Apple and IBM, which are, you know, some of the big whales out there. So are these really outliers and special cases that can justify kind of the cost of the architecture and the new designs, or is this a harbinger of things to come?
Well, that is absolutely a key question as to depending on your belief here will depend upon your investment strategy. My strong view is that it's a harbinger of systems to come, and that's based on both practical experience of what happens when you can remove bottlenecks, I/O bottlenecks from systems. What happens to companies themselves? What happens to the productivity? And one of the key findings in terms of productivity is that if you can reduce the response time by a factor of 10, you can improve productivity by a factor of 2. That's a rough rule of thumb, and it won't apply for everything. But assuming for the moment that, I mean, there's a lot of evidence from a lot of studies to show that is true. Assuming that is true, if you can increase the amount of data, use new technologies to increase the amount of data and keep the response time the same or reduce the response time, you can have an enormous impact on the cost effectiveness, on the productivity of end users themselves. And this is the biggest driving force in terms of cost justifying things. If you can double the productivity while they're using systems of the personnel in a company, you don't need to do much math to show that is just an enormous potential impact on productivity. If you can, instead of having system sprawl, connect systems together much more closely, so that you can simplify the updating and have a single copy of data, then again, you have massively improved the productivity of the company as a whole. And what we're talking about here is 10 or 15% reduction in the number of people you need to run an organization. So what does that mean for example, for a healthcare company? What does that mean for a call center? What potential have you got there to reduce costs? Let's just play out the Watson thing for a moment. Let's say, for example, that users can ask questions of a system and directly, and that they can get back, say, 50% of the answers, quite complex answers, about their healthcare, about questions about their healthcare or questions about health. The reduction in number of people required to man those call centers, man those systems, both from questions from doctors or questions from patients, would be enormously impacted, absolutely enormously impacted. So the potential for applications being written in a completely different way with huge amounts of data will be driven by business, by businesses wanting to be more efficient. And the question of costing, et cetera, will go out of the window. That will not be the issue that has to be solved. So I'm of the view that this technology will change the way that systems are designed, but also I'm very cognizant of the fact that this will take a long time to happen. This is a 20-year cycle. It'll start quicker in terms of improving current systems, but the real exciting times are applications like Watson, like Siri, which will take longer to develop, but will bring enormous returns on investment.
Great, David. So I guess maybe you can give a little color around, you know, what are kind of the requirements or enablers for the systems that I'm guessing from what you're saying would be without any disk and be flash only.
Yes, let me be quite clear. Disk is not going away. Disk will always be where data is the raw data is kept. It's the most cost-effective, as Josh pointed out. It's, let's assume, 10 times cheaper and will continue to be 10 times cheaper than any other way of doing it. What the requirement will be is to take out the data itself and have that available in flash. And there'll be big data applications that will be required to enable that, to process that data and make it available. So this doesn't go away in any way, shape, or form. What it does mean, though, is that for production systems, 99.9% of all the accesses will be to data in memory as opposed to data on disk over the next decade and a half. That will be the vast majority of the accesses to data. So what are the technologies that are required to make this transition? Well, first of all, the requirement of flash or the improvement of flash is one of the main technologies that will drive this. There may be other technologies other than flash that come along, for example, phase change memory from IBM or memory assisters. The important thing to realize is that technologies will be born through consumer market, not through the IT market. So if those technologies are useful in the consumer market, then that potential may be useful for systems design. But if not, then Flash will be the predominant technology. And Flash obviously is non-volatile, which is its huge advantage. And the Flash itself will be in all parts of the system. It'll be in the system itself as something that's directly accessed by the application. It'll be in the server itself, maybe as a cache, flash cache. It'll be in the arrays as flash only arrays, and it'll be all the way through the system. And there will be different use cases for where it should be. But fundamentally, you will, in the same way, want to move that data around as little as possible, but it'll be much easier to do. So from a technology point of view, Flash is improving, you know, the normal cycle of every 18 months, and it's improving both in terms of durability and in terms of performance and in terms of cost performance. So all of those metrics are improving rapidly and will continue to improve, certainly through two or three cycles, certainly beyond 2015. So that's one of the areas of technology. Other areas of technology that we require to make this happen, obviously things like data and memory architectures, data in-memory databases, technologies like I/O tiering as opposed to moving the data around in traditional tiering. There'll be I/O tiering, where you access data, control data by the amount of movement. There'll be mixed use of the type of flash memory. For example, there's much cheaper three-cell technologies, three bits in a cell technologies. They're not quite so friendly for writing to in particular, but they're a lot cheaper. And then there's the one bit per memory cell technology, which can be written an awful lot, but is much more expensive. So there'll be mixed memory, mixed flash memory usage. One of the technologies that will be very important for file systems will be distributed cache management, so that you can find the caches where they are around the country or within the data center or across the country. So there are many technologies of that sort that will be required and will come into being. And again, it doesn't obviate the disk. The disk is still there. It is that you use it as to load data, and you use it to extract the data. And then once it's extracted and it's useful, it'll remain in Flash for its useful life.
Okay. Thanks, David. So yeah, just back on kind of the consumer's end. If I was following you there, it's really that the technology needs to have kind of that broad adoption of the consumer market, such as we've seen with Flash and kind of the iPods and iPads, or what we're seeing potentially with ARM processors, with like what HP announced with Moonshot. So some of these kind of cool-looking new technologies that might pop up need to get that broad adoption before they're really going to be viable as a technology. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there are other technologies, you know, racetracks and phase change memory and mem resistors. They're all potential new technologies, and you know, it'll be great if they come in and help this process, because they're all non-volatile technologies. but the it will still happen without those technologies if they don't get adopted by the consumer market. If they're not useful for cell phones and iPads and tablets, if they're not, or for PCs, if they're not useful in that marketplace, then it's very unlikely that they will get the volume that will bring down the prices to be competitive with things like flash, which are very extensively used. So that was my point there.
Okay, great. So, you know, we talked a lot about kind of some new architectures and some new applications for, you know, the average IT practitioner listening out there. What does this mean to their SAM?
Well, in terms of how fast, the question then is how fast this sort of thing will take. So, as I said, initially, the move over to flash will take place with an increasing amount of flash storage in storage arrays, as well as more flash in the servers themselves. So that'll be the probably the first stage, and we're seeing this already. There are a number of people out there, vendors out there with flash-only arrays. So you've got obviously Fusion.io with flash in the server itself and on PCIe cards. You've got a whole variety of vendors, Nimbus and SolidFire and Whiptail and a whole lot more that have flash-only storage. And what they have done as a way of reducing the cost is to compress things and deduplicate things and use the compute power and the lack of constraint to response time to minimize the amount of data there and hold it very cost effectively. And in one of the recent postings, I showed that the cost of data in of active data in a flash only array is cost competitive now with high speed disk, not SATA disks, but a high speed disk. So that'll be one of the ways that it'll start to migrate into the data center. And from a practical point of view, those arrays will start. They'll morph into current arrays will morph into flash only arrays. I think also over that period of time, the SSD way of packaging flash as an SSD, as a disk drive, will disappear. Clearly, it's an inefficient way of doing it, and there are a lot more efficient forms for putting together the flash chips than putting them into an old-fashioned disk drive form factor. So that'll change over the next 4 years or so, and is already changing pretty rapidly. So that's what it'll mean in the short term. And new applications take a long time to design and put up. In the short term, it'll improve the performance of existing applications. It'll give better response times of existing applications. And then will start to be used by the systems designers and the ISVs to start to integrate those applications far more effectively.
I just want to add that the estimated time of HP and Hynix for the memory store is 2014, which in my opinion is too aggressive. They will not manage it. The phase change for IBM, the general availability plan, is 2016, and
right.
The RaceVect memory is 2018.
Right.
Which means that we have now at least 5 years still with flash.
absolutely. At least 5 years with Flash, and if you're a betting person, the probability that those technology, unless those technologies really find a value and use in phones and tablets and PCs, that they won't make it into the general market at all. I think it's less than 50-50 that any of those will get in into the marketplace. It will be great if they do, because that will mean more choice. But it's that doesn't look good odds at the moment.
One of the problems of SSDs is that you practically cannot erase them. And the techniques today, for example, which are working on signal processing and trying to increase the number of the writes of each SSD, the negative development of these techniques is that also you can read erased SSDs. So this is companies don't think about this, for example. But this can be a problem for finance institutes, for security institutes, and et cetera.
Yeah, and erase cycles are improving all the time. They used to be 5,000, they've gone up to 50,000, and the single cell ones are well over 150,000, 200,000. Yeah. The way it, from talking to the designers of these systems, they don't think that the arrays problems represent that anything that will get in the way of using Flash. One of the ways that it'll be designed, one of the probable ways, is that by putting Flash in a larger form factor and spreading the load across a much larger amount of Flash, they will be able to manage that whole process even more efficiently than it is today. So I think you're right, Josh, that's an issue. It has been a design issue, but in terms of looking 3-4 years ahead, I don't hear that as an issue from any of the technology companies, from the LSIs or the STECs of the world. That doesn't seem to be the things that they're worrying about.
The customer should worry about
it. No, they're not worrying about it. And the customer, that's going to be hidden from the customer. I mean, clearly there will be in a Flash array or Flash technology, there'll be multiple types of configurations. There'll be very cheap ones with 3 bits per cell, maybe more. And there'll be the less expensive ones, and the application software and the file systems have to be adapted so that they overcome those sort of limitations and, for example, are able to erase things in large blocks and erase them well ahead of time. The types of file systems that will be used will be slightly differently. But the belief is from myself and other technologists that those won't be the constraints on the adoption. The bigger constraints are design of in-memory databases, design of new systems where you want to be able to get fast access to these databases, design of distributed cache systems such that you know where that data is and you can get it from cache, from flash cache or wherever that is in the country or where it's needed. Those are the bigger constraints in terms of adoption than the raw technology itself.
In my opinion, the biggest problem is very simple, that the user, they don't know which data to put on most, in most of the cases, which data is suitable from Flash. Therefore, the automated data placement, like is it here from IBM, for example, or any sub-LAN automated data placement, is solving part of the problem and improving a lot. So the thing is today, if you really speak with end users, I can roughly say 90% of the people don't use the features that they have in the data system today. They're using thin provisioning not in the right way. They don't use virtualization in the right way to get all the benefits, and etc. And the people who knew how to tune disks and to understand where is the hot data and etc., they retired or died or disappeared, very simple.
You and I are still around.
Yeah, right. But we're not working. Yeah. But we're not working by the end users.
So, speaking of the users, before that we give some time for some additional Q&A. We've got quite a few people on the call, so I'd like to open it up for any questions, observations, or comments from anyone else on the call.
Well, this is Thomas Sakovich with Nimbus Data Systems. I just have one comment. Many of the questions regarding data placement and the adoption of Flash seem to be geared around the perception that Flash is going to be 10 or 20 times more expensive than disk, and that will continue for a period of time, or for a long period of time, or maybe even permanently. And at least what we're seeing is actually the exact opposite, that the price of Flash is falling significantly, the price of disk actually going up, and that could be temporary thing, but certainly in the near term,
yeah,
it's going up. And you know what we've been able to put out on the market, at least from our end, or what we've seen is, you know, so much of the cost in classic enterprise storage arrays are actually in the software licenses associated with running them, and the maintenance agreements just to get basic support and software subscriptions. So if you have kind of the combination of hard drives plus all that software plus all that maintenance, it actually ends up being not so inexpensive anymore, and Flash can get to a price point that is similar or maybe even better than that if you can kind of tackle the total acquisition cost, not just look at the cost of a raw drive versus a raw SSD, but look at the total acquisition cost per gigabyte of an enterprise 15K array versus an enterprise all-flash array. So I think, you know, from our point of view, the cost of Flash and the cost of 15K arrays will actually converge very, very rapidly. They have actually already converged today. And that will sort of push 15K and 10K sort of out of the market over time and yield an environment where everything primary storage is Flash and everything else can be in the cloud or in SATA or in some kind of nearline storage, maybe even tape. We don't think that that's a 10 or 20-year evolution. You know, what we're seeing is that Flash ends up sort of being rather addictive. You know, once customers deploy it, their obsolescence plans for their 15K disk seems to accelerate rapidly. And we think this can happen quickly. And we also don't think that it's necessarily dependent on dedupe and compression. You know, that's the other thing here. There's some notions out there that unless you dedupe and compress, Flash will never compete with disk. We think that's fundamentally wrong. We think it can be done if you're a bit more creative than just relying on dedupe. Not to mention that relying on dedupe introduces a whole bunch of other unknowns in the process of customers evaluating the solution, because they don't know if their data sets will dedupe or will not dedupe, or what kind of dedupe ratios they can expect. It's a whole now, you know, kind of can of worms that can open up pretty quickly. So at least what we're seeing is that the cost parity can happen a lot more quickly against disk. I think it's happening right now, and you don't have to lean on dedupe necessarily to get there.
Thomas, hey, it's great to hear from you, and I think I agree with 95% of what you said. If you take the projections, and I'm actually just updating the projections at the moment. What I projected, I think it was 3 years ago, is that it would be 2012 when the crossover came, and that seems to have been held up pretty well. If you take that projection, after that, what disappears is the enterprise disk, as you said, the 15K, the 10K fiber channel or SAS disks. They disappear in the same way as the 1-inch disks disappeared after the introduction of flash into the consumer market. You know, the lines just stopped altogether. And I agree with you that that's likely to be the case. These things take the 10 to 15 year timescale. It was not to do with the change to flash arrays or flash only arrays. My prediction is much faster than that. For that, it's in the development of the type of systems which will actually exploit this, as opposed to just to make today's environment better. And the forecast that I had for 2015 is that if you look at the spend, about 55% of the spend in 2015 will be on flash storage on the server and flash only storage arrays. So I'm in strong agreement with you that there will be a fairly rapid migration over to that. In terms of your comments about deduplication, I think that will happen. I'm sure that it will happen on your boxes as well. It's just the cost effectiveness and the ability to put it there will just be one of the things that's added onto it, and it'll become business as normal. It won't happen straight away, but it will. It's not needed for flash to be cost effective. That'll happen anyway. It'll be one of those things that'll be so cheap to add on, or relatively cheap to add on, that it'll just be added and turned on or turned off as required by the applications themselves.
On the dedupe point, we have dedupe. We've been doing dedupe for a year and a half. I think the only comment we have about dedupe is viewing it as a required market enabler.
Yeah, because, I agree with you.
I think 90% of the data out there does not dedupe. If you look at digital content and all these other data sets, and you know, also a lot of the dedupe is happening in other places increasingly before it even gets to the array. If you look at these virtualized environments that rely heavily on link clones, or Windows 8 supporting built-in dedupe, other features like this, you know, it cannot be the only thing that's necessary to enable cost-effective flash. It certainly helps, and that's why, like you said, we make it enableable. You can turn it on or turn it off depending on whether your data set benefits from it.
And encrypted files don't dedupe at all. So as encryption gets further and further closer to the application itself, again, that's going to drive down the efficiency of deduplication. Yeah.
I want to add something, Dave. You mentioned flash in the server itself. There are two initiatives now to develop interfaces for SSD on PCIe. The one is SCSI Express, and it is led by HP and Fusion.io, and it's supposed to be next year already. And the other one, much larger group, includes Cisco, Dell, Intel, NetApp, is non-volatile memory host control interface.
Right.
And both of them are the target here is to have very speed access to the flash memory on the PCI bus.
Right. Right. That's excellent contribution. Thanks, Josh, for mentioning it. That those are the traditional SCSI interface when you talk about it for accessing flash is very inefficient, those initiatives are. There's already initiatives, for example, with Fusion.io's VSL. There's a lot of initiatives of improving. Of having atomic writes directly to the flash and avoiding SCSI altogether with changes to the file systems. And if you can do an atomic write to Flash, you massively simplify the whole requirement for the SCSI stack, effectively a two-phase commit type of mechanism that you need in that. So hopefully those will get adopted quickly, and those will be then building blocks for the development of the databases and the file systems, and those themselves then will be the building blocks for applications which can drive much, much greater amounts of data. Okay. Thanks, Josh.
This is Ravi from Pure Storage. In Pure Storage, you know, the all-flash arrays are in the market for the last 6 months. And when we talk,
good to hear from you.
Thanks. Thank you. One of the things we hear from customers when they try to talk about flash all-flash storage, they're not looking at one application which needs performance or anything. As you rightly mentioned, you know, the productivity gains become very obvious if I'm not waiting for my mail to refresh or not, you know, waiting for my SharePoint document to refresh and those kind of things, right? So fundamentally what we have done is we have flash in an entirely new direction, and that's why the concept of inline dedup and all the other things you're adding on also benefits the end users, because flash are fundamentally different from disk drives, and you don't really need to apply the same logic you applied for disk drives and try to do things the same way. So that's what one of the biggest missing points we see in other vendors we have seen in the marketplace. And I thanks for the opportunity for having this call.
Hi there, and I didn't mention you as one of the flash-only arrays in a long list, so apologies for that. One of the case studies that to me was very indicative of what happens in an organization is one that we have up on Wikibon for Revere, R-E-V-E-R-E. They're a distributor in Chicago. And they have an application which is a database application which was totally constraining their ability to actually use the application because it was it got too big effectively for them. They put the whole of the database onto Flash. In this particular case, it was in the server itself. And the productivity impact that they believe they got was a factor of 20%, and they could grow by their revenue by 20% without needing any new people at all. And the major contribution to that, they believe, was putting that data into flash memory. That's a practical example of the productivity improvements that could be made. And obviously long term, the ISVs will be the people who drive this and drive applications which will then be designed for this type of capability as opposed to being designed with the constraints of disk storage in mind. So that's my very strong belief that will happen. That'll take much longer. That'll be a, you know, 5-year cycle before that really starts to happen. But that's going to be the area where IT will want to redesign the applications, redesign the server sprawl, and bring the applications into much more tightly managed, much smaller type of environment.
Agreed. Couldn't agree more, yeah.
Any other, Stu, any other comments from people, any other suggestions, any other beliefs?
Do Yes, this is Eric Iberg at Texas Memory Systems.
Hi there.
And I'd just like to echo some of what Tom from Nimbus said and Ramin from Pure said. With regards to dedupe and compression, Tom was mentioning basically that it shouldn't be necessary, that the economics works out for the flash arrays to just replace hard drives in many circumstances, particularly the performance-oriented areas. And I'd like to mention that in addition to that, the use of dedupe and compression introduces a data dependency on potentially overall storage capacity as well as performance metrics, which we believe doesn't make sense for many of the high-end enterprise workloads, which we frequently target, the structured data, the big Oracle databases, and things like that. But other than that, we agree with the general philosophy that the high-end solid-state storage arrays can replace performance-oriented disk without a problem.
Right.
I see that, this is Ravi again, I see dedupe and compression are some kind of a icing on the cake, and also in some cases like virtualization where you're seeing 20x dedupe ratios, then that becomes the big cake itself. So it's a new technology, so you're trying to do different things. I don't think we can discount dedupe and compression altogether.
It's different things for different applications.
I think that's the important thing. Yeah. It's a technology that's there. It's easy to put in, and it'll get used where it's appropriate, and it'll be obviated by probably a lot more of the design encrypting things and. Much further, closer to the processor. In which case, deduplication and will matter far less. So horses for courses, but it's certainly much easier to apply it, deduplication in a flasher based system than it is on a disk based system. Much easier.
Hey, David, this is Mark Bramford, and I know you're running out of time, but I wondered if you could at least briefly touch on the power savings applicability of this technology and where you see that playing out in the marketplace.
Hey, Mark, it's good to hear from you. And absolutely, from the point of view of power and in the database, and just as much, not just the power, but the power density improvement that this enables, this is a tremendous potential benefit, absolutely tremendous potential benefit, instead of having spinning disks, the reduction. The reduction in cost is for the power, et cetera, is around 10% of the total cost. So it's not the biggest driver, but it is a very significant driver. But one of the bigger drivers is the improvement of performance that will be possible in future systems architectures by removing the disks and being able to put more of the processors closer together without the heat. And that actually will be probably the bigger cost benefit from that, in my opinion, will turn out to be the bigger cost benefit is just removing that heat that's in the servers themselves, removing it out of them and being able to replace that with flash storage. So that's a very, very important long-term problem that it will significantly improve. Anything else you want to add to that, Mark? I mean, you've done a lot of work in this area yourself.
I think the sort of onboard story is interesting because we're starting to see manufacturers tout systems that can use nothing but outside air for cooling, and I think
right.
The flash storage has a part and parcel reason for them being able to do that. And then I agree, you know, your storage array story, I understand that energy savings is not the dominant driver, but I think for certain categories of users, that is a very, very important driver. And I know that people are looking at that aspect of the advantages of solid-state storage and making the play on that basis alone.
And from a world point of view, that requirement is much stronger in Europe and in Japan and in Asia than it is at the moment in the States. So there are different drivers in different marketplaces.
Dave, I'm not sure, because in the regulation of the U.S. government is that in tender, energy has pretty high weight. The energy consumption of computing equipment.
What I mean by that is that political requirement to put in place sustainable technologies or sustainable energy technologies is stronger in Europe and in Japan.
I will say this the other way around. I will say there is another way around. This political is in the States, and it is more recognition in Europe and Japan.
Well, I guess that's. I'm not going to comment as being an expatriate from Europe. I'm not going to comment any more on that.
because there are no laws in Europe, but there is a regulation of the U.S. government in purchasing. Is equipment. So.
Okay. So, David, we've reached the top of the hour here, so I think we need to just wrap things up. Are there any final tips you'd like to give to practitioners out there as to what they should be watching for?
I think my own bottom line on this is that this is a technology that's advancing very, very quickly indeed. It's in the short term, it'll be about how to lower the cost of doing things within the current way that things are done. But the most important long-term question that CIOs should be asking is, if I can put in technologies which increase the amount of data that can be given to end users by factor of 10, factors of 100, factors of 1,000, how can I apply that for my business to get competitive advantage? What are the types of application that will revolutionize the business as we know it? And for example, in the healthcare industry, can I provide systems which reduce by a factor of 2, maybe 10 times the number of doctor visits or the number of visits that are required by providing technologies like the IBM Watson? Those are the sort of questions that CIOs should be looking at incredibly hard. And those are the really exciting opportunities for changing the way that business is done.
All right, great. Thank you so much, David. And as David mentioned, this is a very fast-moving technology topic. I would recommend that everyone please go to wikibon.org and check out the information that we have. As always, from a Peer Insight, before the week is done, we expect to have about 5 or 6 new pieces really crystallizing what was discussed here on this call up on the website. We welcome everybody to read the articles, go ahead and hit comments, feel free to post your own items up there, and Flash will be a technology that we will be keeping a close eye and reporting on very often throughout 2012. So I'd like to thank the entire Wikibon community for participating. Josh, Thomas, Avi, Eric, Mark, and of course David for leading the discussion here. David, was there something you wanted to say real quick?
No, I was just going to say thank you to the people who contributed. That's a very high-powered set of people, and thanks for joining in and contributing so well to the discussion.
Absolutely. It's a very robust ecosystem, and we appreciate everybody contributing. So this